He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
I was reading that allergy season could feel a lot longer for many of us, and it all has to do with our weather patterns, our mild winters, longer springs, summer sort of continuing on. And we were actually talking about the fact that we are seeing kind of fire dangers earlier than we usually would, which is more October, November area. It's because it's been very dry. So kind of looking at the allergy season, I thought this is the perfect question for Dr. Fred Brown. I'm wondering if you're seeing more people suffering from allergies, if it's a harder allergy season for many people, and if this all kind of comes back to our weather patterns.
Absolutely. And good morning, Melissa. Yes, we are absolutely seeing that. If we look at the past, it seems like there's a clearer delineation of what happens from August to, you know, late September, you know, that starts to get cooler and we start seeing, you know, that we start to get at least concerned about, you know, snowfall that sometimes occurs in late October and December. But yeah, we're getting some hot days, aren't we?
Yeah, we certainly are. And it's definitely feeling, you know, abnormal. I know you and I in the past couple of years, Dr. Brown, have talked about more and more people who are now experiencing allergies when they never had most of their lives.
Right. So
that's something we have certainly seen. But are we seeing allergy sufferers suffer longer and are worse off than they have been in the past?
We are, and I think what happens is, and it depends what kind of allergies you have. Sometimes in the summer, some people do better because it's drier. So if it's dry, it does okay. But unfortunately, when we start getting into it, and again, given sort of our area, the humidity is a big thing for us. And the reason why humidity is a big thing, and I'll tell you sort of within my specialty, is because, you know, bugs, bacteria, fungi love the humidity. And that causes this overgrowth of these organisms that can then get into the air, and then they cause, you know, pretty significant pollen issues. So you can see from my standpoint, any molds usually love this type of weather, where it's either, you know, we're starting to see, you know, less water, where we're starting to see sort of that fire season, but still have this significant humidity.
Mm, that's interesting. You want to know something else, Dr. Brown, that I found really fascinating recently? So I think I've told you before that I have eczema. And I don't know if it's allergy, if it's climate. I don't know if it's, and I'm going to throw it out there because it certainly has been suggested by my own doctors. I don't know if it's any, you know, vaccinations. I'm not sure. But my eczema has been horrible in the last few years, in particular, compared to the other 30 years of my life. I mean, it's awful to the point that, get this, I found out that now I love my teeth. Let me tell you, I'm not proud of an awful lot that I've got going on. I love what the good Lord has given me. But one thing that I take a lot of pride in, my teeth. I love to brush my teeth, all that. But recently, we found that my gum line is actually different color. Like, one part is a little more red, the other part is a little more pink. And we're like, what's going on here? What's happening? There's no cavity. There's nothing. It turns out that they believe it is linked to the same sort of reaction my skin is having. And I'm like, wait, how does that happen, though? Does that also fall under you know, allergies and just skin reaction? So I actually was wondering if that also is something that you're hearing about, where there's a connection to, you know, even something going on in your gums or in your, like, in your mouth. I don't know if we have the same. Are we seeing anything from allergy season also linked to issues in the mouth?
So it's interesting. So, you know, again, depending, not too much to go into your medical history, you know, but it really depends. So eczema and other things that affect the mouth and other that you kind of put together would be a little bit more of an immune response.
Oh, okay.
So the answer is...
So totally separate from allergies.
Well, it may not be.
Oh.
So, you know, listen, and people who do have immune-type issues, you know, have a tendency to have allergies, but in different ways.
Hmm.
So it may be an immune response. And obviously these things can be somewhat interconnected. It's tough to say if there's one specific thing that's doing it. But if there's, you know, if there's an increased amount of allergen that's in the air, there's a possibility that it can exacerbate underlying illnesses. I mean, if there's an increased amount of pollen and you have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you know, like acute, you know, like chronic bronchitis or emphysema, then you may have you're going to have a potential harder time during those periods of time because there's those pollutants that are in the air. Same thing is if we're breathing in a lot of different things or a large quantity of it, our body has to respond to that in some way. The best way for us to do it is usually we just kind of cough it out because it usually comes in through the lungs. But what could happen is that our body can respond to it. And if our body responds to it in an irregular way, then it can lead to some unusual responses.
So what do you suggest for allergy sufferers, Dr. Brown? What are some of the things that we could be doing in our everyday lives to decrease the chances of really making this insufferable?
I guess. I mean, there really isn't great treatment for allergies.
Perfect.
I mean, there are. I know. I wish I had one. I mean, you can imagine that the industry for antihistamines, which is sort of the biggest thing that we have associated with allergies, is probably a billion-dollar medication. So those are the Claritins and the over-the-counter medications that can be done. What I would say is that my rule of thumb is use a lot of this as symptomatic relief. Use what actually helps. Try to avoid exposures if possible. And then only use what's necessary. So if you don't need it, these are sort of acute acting medications. So if you don't need to use it, don't use it.
We've got Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health. Here are our peace of mind in the medical field. And true story, I called Dr. Brown about a week ago because I learned about somebody who I love who is dealing with a fatty liver. And I wanted to understand this. How do you get this? And this is where I thought the conversation was great, and it really actually brought peace of mind, honestly, to the Sheketoff family. And so I'm going to have you share that. But interestingly enough, Dr. Brown, I would not share my personal information on the air if it didn't have a connection to the news world. NFL great Dan Marino, and I say that not because I'm only a Miami Dolphin fan, but he is great. The man is amazing. He says he's been living with liver disease for nearly 20 years. The former Miami Dolphins quarterback just turned 64 this week, saying he's been living with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease since 2007. So I want to talk about that because I think sometimes, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of times fatty liver disease is connected or linked to alcohol consumption, right?
That's correct. And that's why the name in it and has alcohol in it. So the most common cause of alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is sort of the big name for fatty liver, is actually over alcohol consumption. So excess alcohol consumption is probably the biggest reason why you'd get a fatty liver.
Okay, so for Dan Marino, I'll throw my loved one in here, and many others, though, we are finding, though, that alcohol is not the only contributor, right? I mean, what else can lead to fatty liver?
Well, so then you'd go with sort of the lifestyle factors, the ones that you would expect to see from our behavior. So we talked about alcohol. The other one would be obesity or being significantly overweight is a big lifestyle factor. So you'd say if you're overweight outside, then you could be potentially overweight inside. And it's important, I think, to also describe what does the liver do. So the liver's main function is to screen out toxins. You know, and if you have, and in particular, if you have a lot of fatty acids that are floating around in your body, then you can actually potentially have that accumulate within the liver itself. So if you can't get rid of that, so if you have obesity, if you are not physically active, or if you have an unhealthy diet and significant saturated trans fatty acids, sugars, processed foods, all of those could potentially lead to a fatty liver. And obviously, there's some over-the-counter medications that are also of some concerns that could put your liver on overdrive. So you need to be careful about some supplements that you could potentially take that can cause a fatty liver.
So when you say that, Dr. Brown, because over-the-counter medications, before people go down a rabbit hole, you're talking more like if you're taking supplements for weight loss or protein type, not protein powders, I don't know, but maybe that is, because I swear you see advertisements all the time, you want to cut, your that in a X amount of time very quickly, you know, take this supplement or take this powder or take, you know, so is that what you're talking about when you say over the counter?
I am. I would be very careful about sort of anything that has to do with sort of a quick fix in that aspect.
Mm.
So build muscle fast, build, you know, lose weight fast. If you hear the word fast on it, just be a little bit wary on that, because that means it's activating your metabolism, and overactivated metabolism can be part of the problem, which is sort of the other reason why you can get it is sort of a metabolic factor. So people who are at risk include people who have diabetes. So diabetes is another big one, and people who have high cholesterol and high triglycerides are other reasons. So if you're activating that immune system, activating the metabolic system, then there's a concern that you can get that increased work of your liver to get rid of the additional toxins, and then in turn it becomes fatty.
Got it. Is it reversible?
So there is new drugs that are coming out to help with it. In general, eating right, exercising becomes the biggest factor. So decreasing and reversing that physical inactivity is probably one of the biggest things. If it's an underlying diabetes issue, then getting blood sugars under control. If it's an underlying cholesterol or what we call hypertriglyceridemia, or having increased amount of fatty acids floating around your body, getting those under control. So getting a regular visit with your physician and getting those things under control can help reverse it and definitely prevent it from getting worse.
And it sounds like, too, Dr. Brown, it's sort of hard to pinpoint. So like in Dan Marino's case,
right?
You know, here's a guy who doesn't drink alcohol, so we know it's not that. And he's clearly not overweight. I mean, the guy's in great shape for 64 especially. So it sounded like he had to actually break down, well, what am I eating? According to the report, it says that he had to cut back on pizza and the ice cream. I don't know if that's like actually true. And his doctors recommended a Mediterranean diet of mostly vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. So I it sounds like almost recommending, if you also don't know some of those obvious factors, like say you're not overweight, say you're really not a drinker, and you really don't know what is leading to that, it almost feels like doing almost like a week inventory. Look at what you are eating, what you're intaking, what is sort of part of your normal routine, and either having a doctor or I would say even a nutritionist. I don't know what you think. Like look at that.
Absolutely.
And say this could be a red flag.
Yeah, and I think in the case where you are concerned about fatty liver, following up with your primary care physician is a good start. Because, again, there's the obvious ones, but there are some rare and unusual things. There are certain types of infections that can actually cause it also, including hepatitis B and hepatitis C, autoimmune disorders, and some rare genetic disorders that also can cause it. So this is a very big differential diagnosis list. So there's a lot of things that are on the list that can cause this. But as you mentioned, Melissa, you know, eating right, exercising is probably the first start, and then continuing down that road.
Well, and I think when you hear fatty liver disease, first of all, liver disease, those are just very triggering, I think, words in the to somebody who's not in the medical field, I should say. So I think it's also knowing, as I mentioned, Dan Marino's lived with this since 2007. So you can certainly reverse it, but also, you know, you don't want it to get out of control. But this is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a death sentence.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I think it's important to note that. Dr. Brown, I so appreciate you. Thank you so much for everything. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.